The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, VSiN, VSiN.com. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. However you take it, it's in. We appreciate it. Still to come this hour, Jason Weingarten will join us from under a cloud of smoke with his baseball thoughts and bets. Chris Felica, the Bear, with his Premier League calls of the week, and college football thoughts as well. Heisman thoughts, perhaps. Or let's review what he had for the Heisman. Because didn't you and him like do a whole bunch of, like, you were joking yesterday, Ohio State backups at every position?
Yeah. I'm trying. Once again, if anybody has bet on anybody who's not the number, I don't know who the number one wideout is for Ohio State this year, but if you have a number two or number three wideout ticket for Ohio State, tweet it my way. We're trying to build a collection of backups on Ohio State to win the Heisman.
UFC 305 from Perth, Australia is upon us, and as always, to help us navigate and win some money betting on it, it's our buddy Jordan Sherwood joining us, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, co-host of the Unnamed MMA Podcast at ESPN Chicago, at Wood on ESPN 1000 on the Twitter machine. What's happening, Jordan?
Everything is good, and always good to join you when we got a big-time fight card coming up tomorrow night from Perth, Australia. So it should be a good one.
Yeah, before we get that, you and Kelly have this conversation off air because, Kelly, you're a Chicago guy. So Kelly wanted to ask about Eberflus, and you said, in terms of him getting fired, you said probably not.
Yeah, I think there's going to have to be a really like horrific season, like a 4-win season, 5-win season for him to be questioned on his seat as coach of the Bears. There's a lot of optimism, obviously, with Caleb Williams. There's belief. A lot of Bears fans believe playoffs are in the mix. I think they go 9-8. But if you're betting on Eberflus to lose his job, I think there's other candidates in the NFL that are likely to lose their job before he would.
I'm with you. I think it would have to be drastic. All right, let's talk UFC 305. Let's start with the main event, middleweight championship. Israel Adesanya, a -130, although we're showing -118 on the screen now. So this is getting tighter, against Dricus du Plessis, who is South African. And du Plessis is talking schmack here a little bit before the fight, which I love.
Yeah, there's animosity between these guys, and it's been building up for quite some time. It's a battle of who's the true African. You got the South African and du Plessis. You've got, you know, Israel Adesanya, who was, you know, born in Nigeria. He did move, you know, away. And these guys expected to fight each other at one point. So interesting things about this fight. First and foremost, this is the longest time off that Adesanya's had in his combat sports career, not just his UFC mixed martial arts career, but his kickboxing as well. So you have to take into effect, you know, how is he going to bounce back off of the loss to Sean Strickland with the amount of time that he spent away? Is he right? Because he wasn't right mentally in that Strickland fight. So has he fully, you know, emotionally put himself back into a place where he could perform and become the middleweight champion of the world? He got really emotional earlier on in the week at the press conferences. So he is fully and emotionally invested in this fight. He does not like Dricus du Plessis. Some athletes step up and perform well. Others can't handle that. When you look at it stylistically, Gail, this is a fight that du Plessis, I think, has some advantages of. He's a pressure fighter. He throws with a lot of power, a lot of combinations. And twice before, in two of his last three fights, which have been losses for Adesanya, it's been against guys that will do that to him. So has Adesanya adjusted? Is he going to be able to take advantage of the openings that likely du Plessis will provide? Who's to say? I think it's going to be a fantastic fight. I'm leaning right now on du Plessis based on the stylistic matchup, where the odds are, and of course, just the time off. I just don't trust it for Adesanya that he's going to adapt and be able to do something that he hasn't done before.
This is a sort of strange question, but I'm trying to reflect the casual UFC observer. So not the UFC hardo, but someone who like came into UFC world during the pandemic, let's say, and is aware of, you know, at one point Adesanya was this feared name. Where does he rank? Like, if you went through your entire I don't want to go through the entire UFC history, but like, where does he rank in terms of
pound for pound power rankings?
Yeah, just pantheon of fighters. Is he even on that list?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, if he's not the greatest striker we have ever seen, he's number two behind Anderson Silva.
Wow.
He has a chance to do something, Gil, That's only been done once before. Win a belt three times in the same weight class. Only Randy Couture did it. He's got a chance to become a three-time middleweight champion. And he, you know, again, a guy that was a kickboxer and came in and just completely ran through a division and beat tough guys. Didn't beat cans, you know, didn't beat guys. I mean, the middleweight division, the guys that he went through, at the time he went through them, like, were legit contenders. So absolutely. And if he does this again against a guy in Du Plessis that's surging, he's undefeated in the UFC as Du Plessis, it would be a fantastic showing for Adesanya to accomplish this.
Wow. But just to clarify, you lean Du Plessis here.
I lean Du Plessis. My likely play actually is going to be, I'm going to wait till fight night, and whoever is the underdog, whoever's got plus money on them, that's where I'm going to probably fire my bet. But I like Du Plessis. I just think he's a little bit more mentally stable heading into this fight and prepared for it.
All right. Co-main is a flyweight bout between Steve Ursig and Kai Kara-France. Steve Ursig, with all the promise in the world to have a long career here, a bit of a challenge to get by Kara-France here, but you don't see it that way necessarily.
No, I don't. And look, you know me, you've talked to me several times. I don't like to have, like, locks of the night. You know, this is the bet, all the units on. I feel that way about Steve Ursig. Wow. I think Steve Ursig has showcased in his young career how special he is, extremely well-rounded. He took the fight on short notice against Pantoja, his last fight in a championship fight, and arguably won the fight. But it was in Brazil, so, you know, maybe you question the scorecards there. And Kai Kara-France is coming off two losses. He's coming off a year away from the octagon. He's coming off of an injury. I think Steve Ursig handles this fight wherever it goes. If it's on the feet, he'll avoid the power and outstrike France. If he wants to, he'll take this fight to the ground. France has struggled with grapplers before. He's been submitted before. And actually, if you don't like the money line Ursig, which I think is fine value at $1.75, I just saw $1.63 this morning. Take him to win via submission. Kai Kara-France has struggled with guys that go after his back. And I think Steve Ursig could look for that opening and that opportunity and look for a finish and get himself right back in the mix for a title shot.
Ooh, I like that. So Steve Ursig on the money line, -163, but via submission, about +550, that kind of thing. Ooh.
Yeah.
Can I interest
little
you
sprinkle,
in a
little sprinkle, Gil?
Can I interest you in a +550, Kelly?
You always can, yes.
Yeah, a little sprinkle on that. All right, right before the co-main and the main then, lightweight bout, Matoush Gamrot against Dan Hooker. Thank God there's a name you can pronounce easily. My God. This, by the way, was the hardest main card to pronounce, I think, in the history of UFC. Matoush Gamrot.
Oh, no, Gamrot. No, come on. There have been worse, but you did fantastic with Gamrot. Well done.
Thank you.
Well done, Gil. You are evolving. You know, this
that's right. Very false, man.
This is a great fight. I love it because Dan Hooker is always extremely exciting to watch. He's violent. You know, he's well-rounded, but you know, look, he's had a lot of wear and tear, in the wars that he's had. He's been finished in what, three of his last four losses. And he struggles with guys that just come after him and look to grapple and look to take them down. That's what Gamrot does. Gamrot likely is fighting for a championship very soon. He only has one loss in his UFC career, and it was a controversial decision. He has a victory over Armin Sarukian, who's been argued to be next in line for the lightweight championship of the world. So not only do I think Gamrot should be in your parlay, but I'm going to fade Hooker here on the finish and go for Gamrot inside the distance. Even though Gamrot is, you know, a point fighter, a control fighter with his grappling and his takedowns, I think he's going to hunt for a finish. And Hooker struggles with guys. It'll take him down. And I think Gamrot will look for the submission finish. But just to be safe, you go inside the distance to add a little bit more value, get plus money on Gamrot to do it.
Wow. Okay. Let's review the plays. Dricus du Plessis right now is the lean at the current price. For Jordan, Steve Ursig, money line, but via submission with the sprinkle at +550. And then Matoush Gamrot inside the distance at about +330 we're seeing right now on that particular market for the lightweight bout. Again, those are in reverse order in terms of chronology. Those are the last three fights, obviously, of the night. I know you don't have any official plays beyond that, but is there any of all the other fights going down at UFC 305 in Australia, what are you looking most forward to beyond those?
Oh, it's the fight before the Gamrot Hooker fight, and that's Tuivasa and Rosenstrike. Like, oh. I want to see a shoey. Every fan that's going to be there in attendance wants to see a shoey. That's in reference to Tai Tuivasa getting a knockout win and then drinking a beer out of a shoe. We want to see it. Stylistically, I like it. I like so the matchup for him against Rosenstrike, but it's a tough go. He's lost four fights in a row. Three of them he's been knocked out. He's in there against a guy that has a death touch in Biggie Boy Rosenstrike, but he's not going to have to worry about grappling. That is Tuivasa. So, you know, Tuivasa, you know, one more time for the fans. I'd love to see it. So not only is he plus 180 to win the fight, but if he's going to win the fight, he's going to win it via KO. And I think that's upwards of 3-1 odds. So that's the fight I'm looking forward to the most. That's the most exciting. So Tuivasa, Rosenstrike, someone's going to sleep, and hopefully it's Biggie Boy. I like the guy, but I want to see somebody drink a beer out of a shoe.
Truly, truly disgusting is what that is. Truly.
How much money would you need to drink just a bottle of Fiji water out of a shoe, Gil? If I started with $3,500.
Yeah, but did you have to define the parameters of the, I mean, is the shoe brand new?
Oh, no. This is my shoe that I'm wearing right now. Yeah.
I'm out. It's not happening. Jordan, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir. Good luck with all the bets.
All right, fellas. Thanks for having me.
UFC 305 from Perth, Australia. Remember the time zone issues, too, with that.
So I was just checking. So we're still on, like, regular UFC time. Man,
they do it for us.
Yeah, yeah. Australia is a little different because there's not really a perfect answer, right? Like, it will be like mid-afternoon for them.
Did you want to pronounce that heavyweight bout? All full names? Full name?
First. I got Rosenstrike. Like, I got that one, no problem. Tai Tuivasa?
I see you're avoiding Rosenstrike's first name, I see.
Yeah. No, I've never been able to. That's one you just go with the last name.
Okay.
It's Jorinho, I believe.
What's that?
It's Jorinho? Rosenstrike? I believe that's what it is.
Arsenio. Coming back with Chris Felica, Premier League and college football. That's on the other side. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Our 2024 Visa College Football Betting Guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, a preseason top 25, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Receive both the college football and NFL betting guide, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, exclusive data like our betting splits as well. See all our subscription options at VSiN.com/subscribe and pick the plan that works best for you. That's VSIN/subscribe. Speaking of college football, it's Mr. College Football, the star of Big Noon Saturdays on Fox. Ladies and gentlemen, you know him as the Bear, El Oso, the host of the Bear Bets podcast. It's Christopher Felica. Chris, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, what's happening?
I'm a little concerned. Like, not that I don't mind being given that title in Mr. College Football, but I think Beef UTech might have a claim to that as well. So that guy cranks out more college football content than anyone.
He does.
But I appreciate that. I appreciate the cap tip.
You're very welcome. I want to get to, we're going to do some tennis. We're going to do some Premier League. We're going to do some NFL, but let's start with college football. You have added another college football play, sir.
I've added a few college football plays, and I think these awards markets, I think you guys were talking about it earlier in the week, that have gotten posted this year.
Yeah.
I think the favorite bet that I've made now all college football all season is Ryan Day to win the Bryant Award. These awards are so narrative driven. And we think Ohio State is going to be really good. Remember, the narrative now is Ryan Day's lost to Michigan a few years in a row. He can't win the big game, which is total garbage. It's not true at all. And he's coaching for his job this year. They went heavy in the portal and NIL. Brought in his buddy Chip Kelly to be the offensive coordinator. Had a great recruiting class. They go out and they beat Michigan and they wind up winning the Big Ten. He's 12-1 to win the Bryant Award. He's going to win the award.
Wow.
That to me is, you know, I'm used to say, like, yeah, I just want to file like this bet away and have it at the end of the year. Like, getting Ryan Day to win the Bryant at 12-1 and just having filed away come like the end of November, like, oh, wow, Ohio State's number one or number two in the country and they're undefeated and they just beat Michigan. Hey, look, they're 3.5-1 to win the title, and I got their coach at 12-1 to win the Bryant.
Who's got that, Chris?
DraftKings.
Okay. I've heard of them. You heard of them?
Yeah.
Okay. DraftKings.
Depends on state, I guess. Depends on state.
Yes.
Oh, depends
correct.
On state.
Yeah.
State.
Correct.
State dependent,
yes.
DraftKings.
Mm-hmm. Yes, correct. I'm in a bad state. figure out things again.
Okay. You said
State doesn't allow me to.
I'm sorry. You said plural college football bets. What else you got?
Yeah. I played RJ Harvey from UCF to win the Doak Walker at 50-1. I don't think Ollie Gordon is going to win the award for a second straight year. So immediately, this is something I want to hop in. He wasn't even the guy at UCF to like game four, game five last year. Ran for over 1,400 yards. I think you add KJ Jefferson into that offense, that probably opens up some more opportunity and maybe some more holes for Harvey to have a big year. Now they're in the Big 12, so he's probably going to have some more eyeballs on him than he was in the American. But I think RJ Harvey 50-1 was a nice dart throw to potentially win the Doak Walker. And I added a bunch of team head-to-head bets.
Ooh.
In terms of wins. I played UCF to have more wins than SMU. I know SMU, I got that at plus 160. I know SMU is a team that is really highly regarded by a lot of people this year, but I wonder, they haven't recruited greatly. I mean, I know they've been in lesser conferences. And then the last 10 games that they played against the Power Four teams, they're 1-9. So maybe they'll go to the ACC and maybe they'll do well. But I like UCF more than I do SMU this year. So I got that plus 160. I played Iowa State more wins than Virginia Tech at plus 160. I think the Cyclones are headed for a 9-win season. We'll see if Virginia Tech can match them in the ACC. I played Syracuse minus 105 to have more wins than Wisconsin. And I like this because I had bet Syracuse over 6.5 a few months back, and now that number has moved. And see, I can't recommend playing them at over 7 or over 7.5, whatever the number is now. But I did look, and I did find this similarly priced team with Wisconsin. I believe that was at DraftKings as well. You look at Syracuse, Kyle McCord, Ohio State's quarterback last year, comes in. Gadsden, the tight end, is back after missing almost all of last year. I think the Fran Brown coaching move is a plus. You look at Wisconsin, I think they're hard-pressed to win 7, and definitely not 8 games this year. You got USC, Rutgers, Iowa, Nebraska on the road, and you still have to play Alabama, Penn State, and Oregon. Like, what Tyler Van Dyke, are we going to see a quarterback for the Badgers this year? The one that showed so much promise as a freshman in Miami, or the one that got benched last year? So Syracuse more wins in Wisconsin was another season head-to-head that I like.
Wow. Okay, let's review. Head-to-heads, UCF over SMU at plus 160, Iowa State over Va Tech at plus 160, Syracuse minus 105 over Wisconsin, RJ Harvey from UCF to win the Doak Walker, and then Ryan Day to win the Bryan Award at 12-1, named, Kelly, of course, after the great UNC Philadelphia Stars Washington Redskins running back Kelvin Bryant. I'm being told that is incorrect. I'm being told that's after Bear Bryant. I'm sorry. Okay. Premier League, what do you got?
I did not do a ton in the Premier League this offseason just because I was so tied up with Copa and Euros, and I really kind of fell behind in who's going where. And the other thing is, I don't feel like tying up so much money for almost 10 months in this market when I'm playing. I think Man City is still the team to beat. I know everybody is high on Arsenal, but do I really want to tie money up for 9-10 months and pick a team that's plus 145 or 150 or so?
No.
To win the league? Like, people are counting on, like, there are very, very few more dangerous things in sports than like counting on Arsenal to like come through and be good and deliver on expectations. Like that's like buyer beware right there, sirens going off. So I'd be careful with that, but I do think you might just want to monitor this because Man City is going to – Rodri isn't going to play early in the year. Foden isn't going to play early in the year. They got a bunch of guys that they're kind of – Kyle Walker, that because they played so much in Euros, they're kind of holding him down, back a little bit. So maybe if City maybe draw a couple of early matches, maybe they fall behind, maybe they drop some points, that might be an opportunity to get City at a little better price, just kind of like what happened last year where they were a much better price mid-season than they were early in the year, and then they closed like a freight train and wind up winning. There was one head-to-head that I did like team totals. I did play Brentford more points than Fulham, the two London rivals there that recently promoted a couple years back. Brentford, I think, getting Tony back will be a big deal, and I'm not sure that Fulham are better than them. So I'd play Brentford head-to-head higher position in the table than Fulham.
All right, Brentford over Fulham in the head-to-head. All right, tennis. Give me 45 seconds on tennis. What do you got?
I know you and J-Rod are going to be mad at me.
Oh, no.
But I played Paula Badosa 50-1 to win the U.S. Open. I played Mira Andreeva 26-1 to win the U.S. Open. I think the four players at the top, Iga, Coco, Rybakina, Sabalenka, all have issues right now. And I know your love for Iga. You go back and look. Major Grand Slam events outside of the French Open, she's been in 16 of them. Three quarterfinals, the one win in the U.S. Open a couple years back, and seven first-week losses. Like, there is money to be made in these markets, like betting against Iga to either win a quarter or reach the semi or even win the event. Like, I don't know if we're going to get a Leila Fernandez, Emma Raducanu, like a qualifier-type final here, but maybe we get like a Jasmine Paolini, Barbora Krejčíková final like we got at Wimbledon as well, where a couple of accomplished players are looking for a slam. But I'd be looking to fade all four of these top players in Flushing Meadows in a couple weeks.
Well, you stole my thunder because we were going to talk about this later, and I like your two picks. I like Mira Andreeva, and I like Paula Badosa, and I think it is a wide-open U.S. Open, and this will be the one where Iga will win because we feel it's wide open. That's what's going to happen.
But that's okay because they do have over 1.5 slams from earlier in the year.
That's right. And she has won a U.S. Open before. But yes, it feels, again, I said earlier on the show, those top four ladies, Sabalenka, Swiatek, Goff, Rybakina, so many question marks above the shoulders. You know, that's the thing. Not physically, but above the shoulder. Although with Coco, there is a forehand problem for sure. All right, NFL. Oh, yeah. NFL to close.
I bet Trevor, Kelly, I heard you earlier talking like negative about the Jaguars. What's your buddy from Duval going to think about that, who you had on a couple of years ago?
The incident.
I can't believe you. What you went against your buddy. I'm gonna pick him up though here. I bet Trevor Lawrence to lead the NFL in passing yards at 25-1. This is a guy who threw for over 4,000 yards last year, despite missing a game, despite playing parts of other games with an injury. Like, this is a big year. I mean, the jury is out. Everyone kind of thinks he's maybe not the generational type quarterback that people thought they were getting when they drafted him number one. You draft Brian Thomas Jr., I think, is a big threat. You bring in Gabe Davis, that wide receiver unit they had last year, dropped a lot of balls, and they're now gone outside of Christian Kirk. Travis Etienne catches a lot of balls out of the backfield. And if you look outside of a trip to Tennessee in week 14, they don't play a game outside of Florida or a dome from week 10 on. So you're not going to run into late season bad weather situation. He's going to have a fair, clean track. But I thought Lawrence 25-1 was worth a shot to lead the league in passing yards.
You two should fight. You two should fight about it.
Yeah, fisticuffs.
Hey, he can lead the league in passing yards while they finish 8-9.
By the way, that
while they go 7-10, right?
Exactly.
that interview that Felica is referring to back in the day, that was the only time Kelly was ever truly mad at me when I referred to it as the incident. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. Jason Weingarten. You too. Jason Weingarten next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game here at Bar Canada at the D. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. We get tweets at Beating the Book. New York Mets 16. Scott Stefanski talking about our coach of the first coach fired discussion that we had earlier. He said, Stefanski is shorter than Pierce, shorter price than Pierce.
Yes.
Is Pierce getting more credit for a three quarters no completions win over Kansas City than five different quarterbacks and a Chubb injury? It's very true.
There's a few on here that I'm kind of confused by the odds.
We don't know how reliable the odds maker is there.
Yeah.
Ian McDonald, he's with me and Jordan on Eberflus, says no chance Eberflus will be the first coach fired. He and Poles share an agent, talking about Ryan Poles, their GM, and are tight. When he was 3-14 in 2022, the Bears were ranked in the bottom three at every position in the NFL, and he wasn't fired then. Take on Eberflus. Ladies and gentlemen, he comes to us from under a cloud of smoke somewhere in Southern California. It is Jason Weingarten. You can follow him on Twitter at Spreadopedia. What's happening, Jason?
Not much. Just getting ready. Got a couple baseball games today. Got a big weekend. We get a NFL Network quadruple header tomorrow for preseason. So I'm sure we'll find some stuff to bet, but it should be a good weekend.
Do you sit in front of your TV and watch all four games, all four preseason games? Is that what you do?
Honestly, I haven't decided what I'm going to do tomorrow, but watching four straight preseason games on a Saturday in August sounds like quite the afternoon. So I might at least watch two or three of them.
Oh, it's quite the afternoon, all right.
Wait, Jason, what do you bet? What are you betting in preseason? Are you looking sides, totals, lot, in-game props? What are you looking for?
Everything. Second halves. I'll do some live betting. You just go through, read all the practice stuff. There's so much preseason and training camp beat writing now that used to never exist. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you got beat writers telling you what happened every rep of practice these days. So, the information is always there if you care to spend enough time to look through it.
This is worth stopping down and actually talking about this because, again, week two had a game last night, but none today, and then, a whole slate of them tomorrow. But think about all the preseason stuff we have talked about on this show is more macro than it is precise. Because, again, you can get into the details like, the Raiders are going to decide, maybe they already decided, but they're going to decide between Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell tomorrow in their game against the Cowboys. Maybe that's a big over.
It's like somehow that really ends, it does sound like that
yes.
is somehow a factor. Saturday's game is a factor.
Could come down to one game. I don't know. And then the Panthers aren't going to play Bryce Young at all, still, is the word. But the point I want to make is, so you can get into the details of these games, but think about it. We had Fezzik on. He did all the overs, right? He made all the overs move early in the week. He just decided blanket totals he's going with. Then there's the whole discussion about the Dr. Bob trend of if you lose week one versus a team that wins week one, the teams that lose tend to do really well historically, at least in the four-game arc it used to. We'll see if it does in the three-game arc. Like I don't think it did necessarily last year, if memory serves. But what Jason is talking about, I think, is the biggest bit of macro preseason advice, which is, and Cleve TA, who we referenced yesterday on the show, he was talking about how at some point he tweeted this out where he, in the last few years of preseason, is 15-2-1 against the spread, if I have his record correct. And he does none of this, get ahead of the number on totals, do a trend. He just does perfect information beat writing, right? So he doesn't care where the number's moving. We tend to, because we're filling content, we tend to make a lot of that, in the season, obviously, that's a thing we talk about a lot. But in the preseason, he just completely couldn't care less about it. Just give me the information I need up until kickoff. And it has worked spectacularly well for him. So anyway, that's the Jason Weingarten strategy as well. Perfect information, follow the beat writers, and then in-game as well. So no pre-flop for you at all at this point?
I like the Broncos on Sunday. I laid 7 with them.
Okay, Broncos.
I'm on that side as well.
Look at you.
Got a little bit.
All right, let's go.
All right.
It's going to be a big decision to end the week. I can already feel it.
Baseball today, what are you playing?
Two plays. I got the Rockies +152 and the Mariners +113. I actually played that +118 last night before I went to sleep. So two dogs today. I really like the Rockies again. I know I bet them once last week when I was on the show. Padres on the road. You get a knuckleball pitcher starting at Coors, and it's their first of 18 games in 18 days. So the Padres, who have been one of the hottest teams in baseball since the All-Star break, get a big test coming up this next 18 days. It's start of the marathon season in baseball right now.
Yeah, I should probably mention that when I was talking about August wins. The Diamondbacks are 11-2 in August. The Padres are 10-2, but the Diamondbacks have 14 games left, and the Padres have 16 games left, if I have that correct, in the month of August. Is it 14 and 16 or is it 13 and 15? Either way, the Padres have two more games in pocket left, and that is what Jason is talking about right there. Okay.
Oh, happy Paul Skeens Day.
Happy Paul Skeens Day too.
Oh yeah, let's see what happens today. facing a good lineup. It's I don't want to discount what he's doing because he's still a great pitcher, and I don't want to say he's gonna blow up tonight and then he goes out and pitches great. But it's a good lineup. I'll probably try to find this game on Apple TV or whatever and watch a bit of it.
Oh, yeah, it's Friday night, Apple TV baseball night. Speaking of Paul Skeens, glad we segued into that. A little blind resume. This is Jason provided this for us. This is player A and player B. If we can throw that up on the screen. This is player A first. 114 games, 75 runs, 123 hits, 27 doubles, 19 homers, 64 RBI, 20 stolen bases. You see the slash and the total bases in the OPS plus. Okay. And then let's throw up player B, which is comparable to what we just saw in player A. This is up to date. Everything is just slightly behind what we saw in player A, but essentially the same stats, just a tick behind. Would you like to reveal who player A and player B is for us, sir?
Player A is Michael Harris when he won the Rookie of the Year over his teammate Spencer Strider, who started 21 games and had over 200 strikeouts and I believe a sub-3 ERA doing both of those. I want to say it was 2.67 his rookie year, 2.76, but I might not have that exact off the top of my head. Player B is Jackson Merrill, who's put up those numbers already, you know, starting since day one. And I don't know, he's not the favorite for some reason. I think at this point, Paul Skeens shouldn't even be minus money. He should be at best even. But you know, I'm willing to entertain arguments as to why I'm wrong.
Let me ask you about Jackson Churio of the Brewers. Is he legit in this?
He's on fire the last month or so. On pace, I don't like using that word, but I'll say, okay, he has an outside chance being the youngest player ever to have a 2020 season. He is a future superstar. He's going to be the center of that Milwaukee lineup for quite some time, probably for in the future. I think what it comes down to is guys like this are going to get penalized for not playing the full season.
Yeah.
But if you look at his numbers and you say, well, at least we have to consider him, and he's down to 25-1 at FanDuel, and you also have to consider Tyler Fitzgerald, who's, you know, having an absolute just heater of the season since he came up.
Yeah, he is.
How do you rank the Jacksons and Fitzgerald, and where do you put Skeens in all this? And again, I'm not trying to discredit anything Skeens is doing, but he literally has 15 starts, about to make his 16th start on a last place team. Why are we giving so much, you know, credit to a pitcher on a last place team? They're last place with him, they're last place without him. You know, he's not going to pitch a day after they get eliminated. You know, nobody's going to risk his arm and his future on meaningless innings. What is the case for him to still be the favorite?
Yeah, you are going to turn out to be right, Jason. You're going to be proven right here. And it is just a reminder of the baseball season is exceedingly long. 162 games of 6 months of regular season. 6 months of regular season before we even get to the playoffs. And so we have seen this happen before in multiple markets over the years. Remember that year where Chris Sale was the absolute Cy Young Award winner? I think he was with the Red Sox at the time. And then he was the absolute runaway Cy Young Award winner until he wasn't, right? Until August rolled around or late July rolled around. And then all of a sudden, it sort of fell off a cliff and he didn't win the award. We see this all the time. Robbie Ray, when he won, he wasn't even a thought. He was 100-1 on July 31st, the year that he won in 2021, I believe it was, with the Blue Jays. So when we get to August, it's tough for our brains. This is unlike any other sport because those sports are much more compact calendar-wise. But you have to eliminate 4 months of what you think in your head and be able to sort of flip the switch and realize, oh, everything we thought is not necessarily the case. And so that's the challenge, I think, of baseball awards markets that is different from other sports as well.
And I'm not saying Merrill's necessarily going to win. I'm just saying Skeens is likely going to lose.
Yeah, but remember, people were like, he might win Cy Young, let alone offensive rookie. I mean, rookie of the year wasn't even a thought, right? Like, they were even going to Cy Young at one point. So that's what makes baseball interesting. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it.
Have a good weekend. Hopefully get some wins, and I'll be back next week.
Thank you, sir. Kelly and I will come back, a little tennis talk, and a little Giants hard knocks for you.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Episode 1 of Circa Survivor, the quest for $9.2 million will make its debut Monday night on VSiN. 5-part docuseries takes you inside the high-stakes world of the annual Circus Survivor contest. Follow the contestants as they make all-or-nothing picks over the 2023 NFL season and go behind the scenes of the world's largest legal betting contest. Several VSiN hosts make appearances along the way to offer their advice. Watch Circus Survivor, The Quest for $9.2 million on Monday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on VSiN.com and on YouTube TV, as well as a live broadcast on X. Go to VSiN.com/Survivor for details. Can't wait for that. Again, episode 1 is this Monday night, and then episodes 2, 3, 4, and 5 the following Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights.
Yeah, it was well done. I got a little sneak peek last night, watched a little bit of it. Looks, yeah. Looks very well done.
Wish Nev's in it, I believe. I hope at some point. He always steals.
I was gonna say, in the like 10 minutes I watched, there was a shot of him. I didn't hear him speak, but I saw him in a shot. there are some funny early in the first episode. There's some funny Gil and Bill back and forth.
Oh, interesting.
Like one cut of you talking and then one cut of Bill talking because they're like kind of different strategies of approaching it. So it's edited interesting.
Oh, interesting. All right. Bill and I went to the Italian American club and we talked Survivor one night. So,
before filming that.
No, that was part of the thing.
Before that. No, this wasn't that. This was you guys in the book.
I believe
both of you in the book.
Okay. Looking forward to that. Speaking of docuseries, so yesterday I binge-watched I know the Bears Hard Knocks has begun, but I have become a much bigger fan of the in-season Hard Knocks, which was on the Dolphins last year, and now the preseason Hard Knocks, which was on the Giants. So until I fell asleep with 20 minutes left in the last episode, I watched 4.5 of the 5 episodes of the Giants, and it was fascinating, and I think must viewing. Like, if you watch these, you know these teams in a way that you definitely wouldn't otherwise. And with the Giants, I don't really have a problem with them letting go of Saquon Barkley. I think it was the actual proper thing to do from their. They are in cap hell because of the Daniel Jones contract.
Totally.
We talk about this all the time with the cruelty of the economic system with
NFL
quarterbacks.
I had a problem with the way they told him about it, but yeah, that seemed
Saquon,
a little odd.
Yeah, that was different.
Go test the market, but we'd love to have you back.
Yeah.
Like what?
Well, they thought they were doing they didn't want to franchise him again. But yeah, check out, we don't know what your market value is, so why don't you go out there and come back?
Yeah, go check it out.
And,
we'd love to have you back.
And he ends up with the Eagles, and the owner is just devastated by this, even though he tried to downplay it. But I ultimately think it's what they had to do. You can't pay a running back $12 million when you stink. You just can't. It's not the right thing to do. And they're going to find out if Daniel Jones, if they don't know already, they're going to find out if Daniel Jones is worth their time anymore after this year. But it's like it not only killed them there, killed them on Xavier McKinney too,
yeah,
who ends up with the Packers. So, but structurally, I don't have a problem with it. You know, the Brian Daboll thing was interesting because clearly, Brian Daboll, when it comes to the X's and O's, the interaction with him and all the prospective quarterbacks in the draft, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and specifically Caleb Williams, was fascinating how he got them to like regurgitate plays back to him and get the sense of how they knew the structure of what he would be calling. That was great, and Daboll's clearly great about that. But like, you know, when he's interviewing them, he's like lying down on the chair, his feet are up on the I was like, bro, how many Super Bowls have you wanted to be acting? You think Belichick acted like this? You think Gibbs acted like this? Parcells, when they talked, maybe they did. But that was interesting. And I just think they're just not going to be a very good football team. But they did as well as they could in free agency and wideouts, and how they arrived at Malik Nabers over Roma Dunze.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't specific. They just really fell in love with Malik Nabers.
Okay.
And
yeah, that part I'd like to watch, I guess, because that surprised me a little bit in the draft.
But you watch these and you get a real good sense of, oh yeah, this team, you know, every good and bad organization starts at the top. And I just think the Daniel Jones contract ruins this football team. It just does. Cause you can't, every move you make, they get Brian Burns from the Panthers. So they do have good defensive players in Dexter Lawrence and Brian Burns, but you lost McKinney on the secondary. So, I mean, it's going to be a tough year for them. No question about it.
Yeah, I think they're going to be pretty bad. I think you get some great insight, too, watching that, of just how every single coach and front office person dresses exactly the same.
Exactly the same.
It's like, hey, do you have a pair of khakis, tennis shoes, and a Giants pullover? You're good to go.
Yeah, fleece pullover.
You're good to go.
Yeah. It's like the .com bubble 20 years later. Oh, look, a fleece vest. What do you know?
It's like a uniform, basically, they got to wear. Like, why are you guys all wearing the same thing?
But I recommend, it's funny, that you and I both sort of, we didn't talk about this a lot, but we We used to love Hard Knocks training camp.
Loved it.
But as the years went on, they started to show less and less of the, you know, the rooms where they would cut players. And they never showed the adversarial ones. It was always like, thanks, coach, thanks for the opportunity. Like back in the day when the Chiefs, I was telling you off air, like Rod Gardner got cut, and Rod Gardner went in there mad. Or the Cleveland Browns year was great when like Baker Mayfield, when Hugh Jackson was telling Baker Mayfield, oh, you're the second string quarterback. And he was supposed to be happy about it. Baker Mayfield's like, oh, thanks. Like it was just great. It was fantastic. And how the assistant coaches were sort of better than Hugh Jackson. But Hard Knocks training camp has become very formulaic and dull.
Yep.
But the preseason, which is going through free agency, going through the draft, and the in-season, which is obviously a week hamster on a wheel, game-to-game thing, those are fantastic.
Yeah, I got to stop being so stubborn and check out like the Giants one and stuff. Because I got to that point where like, it's one of the greatest shows and greatest show ideas ever. Like, are you kidding me? From like when it started, like we all loved it. It became that for me. It's just... I mean, we've worked in TV for a long time. We kind of know some of this stuff works. And, like, there is a formula. If it works, like, you don't mess with the formula. And it feels like that with the preseason one. I'm just not as interested in those anymore. Even though they do a great job with like the, you know, unique personal stories behind some of these players that you have no idea about. They do a great job with that every single year, but you're right. I would like to check out the ones that are at different portions of the season. I think that would be more interesting to me.
This was great because like the Brian Burns trade happened because Joe Shane is buddies with his Panthers counterpart, and He like came over to him during like I think the senior bowl practices or whatever. He's like, you know, I'll give you Brian Burns for a couple ones if you want, you know? That kind of thing, right? He's like, what? Wait, how about one and something else? He's like, oh, yeah, maybe.
You always do wonder how these things even start. Yeah, how these talks even start.
Or like the Giants wanted to trade up to three if the Patriots weren't going to take Drake May or take whatever quarterback was available at that point, and he literally at the combine walked around the stadium to the Patriots side and is like, hey, can I talk to you for a second? So, like, if you guys decide you're not going to, like, take a quarterback, could you give us a call before you make any pick? You're right there? Yeah. Sure, yeah, we'll make a call. Yeah, it was like, these are how these things start. You wonder how these big trades or non-trades get made. Plus, the
Colts. That one's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Like, that's like,
the Colts,
hey, Daniel Jones, how do you feel about this?
The Colts wanted to trade up to six, but the Giants had already decided we're going to take Malik Nabers at that point once the Chargers went alt. So, I mean, all these little backroom things, they're all these, like, casual conversations like you and I would have.
Yeah. So, man, what were the Colts going up for? A defensive line or wide receiver?
Yeah. Probably for Nabers or Dunze or somebody. Yeah.
It is interesting to think back on now.
So, that stuff is very cool, which you don't see in training camp, right? Training camp is the same stuff. Guys trying to make the team, that kind of thing. By the way, I just want to mention real quick also the Felica thing about the tennis. I do think there is going to be betting opportunities for the U.S. Open. I, of course, will have a ticket on IGA, but more than any other year, I do think on the women's side, sort of like I say in baseball, like it is your moment to take long shot baseball plays this year. There is no dominant team. Now, again, I sort of joke, may it result in the Yankees playing the Dodgers in the World Series? Ironically, after all that, who knows, maybe. But if you were ever to take a long shot in baseball, make long shot bets like I did. I mean, I have multiple Diamondbacks bets now, right? Number one seed, to have the best record, to face the Royals in the World Series. I think this is your year to do that. But I would say that in the U.S. Open on the not on the men's side, but on the women's side, I do think you can go down. Mira Andreeva was a great call by Chris. So is Paula Badosa. We don't know what the draw is. Obviously, the draw is going to affect things.
Who's my girl with the tats? Is that Andreeva?
No.
Vondrousova.
Vondrousova. Marketa Vondrousova. My girl with the tats.
Yeah.
She won Wimbledon last year. Her career record on grass. You want to know why I hate grass? She won two grass matches before she won Wimbledon. She still has a sub-500 grass record. Anyway, so I do think this is the year to take a shot on somebody beyond Iga.
I was thinking of it when Chris brought up Paolini. Like, that, like what a season. Like,
it's incredible.
Like, it would be
out of nowhere.
Like, think about if she made a run in this one again. Like, it'd be ridiculous, the Grand Slam run she's been on.
Great match today between Andreeva and Paolini. I would lean Andreeva in that match, but that should be good, too. So just wanted to point that out. So what are your week two preseason picks really quick before we go?
I laid it with the Broncos, but I did that. When did those open? Monday?
Yeah.
Monday, we were with like live texting with Fezzik. I was just looking at the openers. I thought it was really light, 4.5. I bet it at 4.5. It's out to 7 now. But Jason talked about he bet it at 7, laid the 7 with the Broncos. So I did bet that. That's the only side I bet. And then Giants-Texans were on the over.
Okay. Casper Ruud and Elena Avanesyan are the two tennis plays today. Let's try to continue the win streak here in Cincinnati. We have done all we can do. Good luck week two in the NFL and anything else you're betting. Monday, the docuseries begins, the Survivor docuseries Monday night. We'll be back Monday. Kelly and I, that is. Best Bets is next. Enjoy from Visa, the sports betting network, and a week away from sushi.